There are men who can see a 7 preceded by 2 zeros without ever thinking, cool. There are men who can see the international sign language gesture for I love you without ever thinking, thwip. And then there's Adam Bernstein and Doug Lost. Two men who should have better things to do but aren't doing them right now. These are two grown-ass men.
We have a special guest on this week's podcast of Grown Ass Men.
Surprise guest. Welcome, W.C. Fields.
Surprise guest, W.C. Fields. Very into comics.
Yeah. What comics was
W.C. Fields?
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. Right. Gene Martinet. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
All right.
See, first time out of the gate, I said it correctly, which is... It's not what I usually do. Usually no, I'll...
That's good.
Martinet.
Yeah, when I'm in Paris, I'm Jean Martinet.
J'aime le bleu.
C'est bon. Jean is visiting with us today because she wrote a very funny book. A book called Truer Than True Romance.
Truer Than True Romance is a truer than true all-night dance you hold. New love is coming soon. Dance beneath the evening moon. We'll meet by chance, a real happenstance. Life can change with just a glance. Truer than true romance.
Well, thank you.
And it really fits into kind of... some of the stuff that we like to talk about here on Grown Ass Men, because it's...
Right, all we talk about is, so far, every episode's been about romance
yes,
comics.
Yes, it's just about romance and love.
Yeah, romance in the 60s.
Yeah.
And how Swamp Thing and Man Thing love each other
well,
dearly.
Yes, well, Swamp on Man activity.
Anyway.
We know they were all written by men originally anyway, so...
So romance comics were a crazy genre of comics, because they were so... manipulative and kind of evil.
They were like Doris Day movies on steroids.
Yeah,
right.
You know, they were very formulaic, and they were, in fact, which I didn't know when I was 11 years old or 8 years old and reading them, they were all written by men.
All written by men.
Which you now can see when you read them as adults, like there's the stories and everything.
As if Jack Kirby and Joe Simon didn't do enough to create comics, they even created romance comics.
Which ones did they create?
Well, they created the first real romance, which I think was Young Love or Young Romance.
I actually don't know which one was the first one.
I think it was 1947 or something
like
that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And Joe Simon came up with this idea while he was in the Coast Guard. And when he got out, he pitched it to Jack Kirby because he saw that so many people who were adults were reading kids' comics. And he thought, oh, I bet there's... a market for more grown-up comics, so they did this romance.
Right. And, you know, in every comic, the woman was always trying to find true love, and that was the only thing that mattered to her. There was nothing else in her life but finding the man of her dreams, usually in the rain. He had to have blue hair. But I also, it was funny, because when my brother and I were, we were allowed to go get comics when we were going back from our beach house, and my brother would buy Superman comics, and I, just because I guess I was sort of trained that way, would buy romance comics. But instinctively, I already knew the romance comics were dumber, and that the Superman comics were what I was waiting for. You know, I just read the romance comics while I was waiting for my brother to give me the Superman comics.
Uh-huh.
You know, then we would switch, and he'd read the romance comics, so.
Right.
I remember, like, going to some early... comic book stores where I could buy old comics, and they always had like Millie the Model and things like that, and no one seemed to want them.
After when they got into the 60s, I think that there was a period when they figured out how to make it more popular, and they had themes like Woodstock themes, you know, so that if you were 10 years old and you saw the romance comic that had a picture of the Woodstock, you know, with the hippies on the front,
right,
you know, that would be sexy and alluring enough for, as a kid, for you to go, want to know what, if you could get some other window into what that was all about.
Right, know? Right, right, right.
But they were totally absurd, which is why I wanted to make fun of them when I got older.
So this book that we read, Truer Than True Romance, is a fantastic read.
Thank you.
I just read some just now again.
Tell me how it came about.
Well, tell you, just I have to just say before I tell you how it came about that I'm ashamed to tell you that I laughed aloud while I was writing this book. And I've written a lot of books, and I have never had so much fun writing a book in my life.
It comes across.
If I could just like stay and write these kind of books for the rest of my life, I would be a happy camper.
The reviews also, when you go on Amazon, the reviews of your book are.
No, I got it.
People love this book.
Yeah.
People, it's like uniformly, they're like, this is one of the funniest books I've ever read.
It was extremely gratifying. How it came about was that I knew somebody at DC Comics. They wanted to redo something about romance comics. You know, they always
can you give
try
me
to...
a little timeline as you fill this into, like when?
Okay,
this...
so it was 2000 and let's say I want to say it was like 1999 probably.
Okay,
and they were looking to do. I knew somebody at the company, and they were looking to do just like a reprint, which they would do once in a while of the romance comics because they're sitting around in their archives, and they always like to kind of trot them out again. And so at first they wanted me to do see if I could write an introduction. Mm-hmm. Just because of my doing these other books, because I do The Art of Mingling and a lot of other books on socializing, and they thought I'd be the right person to write the introduction, also because I had a collection of romance comics. And I started looking at them when I started trying to write the introduction, and I just got this idea that it would be much more fun to actually spoof them, because I started rereading them and realized how ridiculous they were.
Right.
And so I said that I wanted to do this, and they said to me, well, you could never sustain... You could do a, you know, you could do a panel, you know, like one panel, one picture, and do a spoofy caption, but you could never sustain the whole story
right.
without changing the art. And I said, let me try. So I took the first one in the book, which is called My Heart Said Yes, But My Therapist Said No.
Right.
And which was called something else originally. And although I don't even remember what the original ones are called, because they whited out the stories for me when they sent them to
me. Right, right.
The way I did them was they would send me the story with the balloons all whited out. And then I would just stare and stare at the pictures until the story
That's
emerged.
Amazing.
And I just had so much fun. And the challenge of having to write to the size of the balloons.
Yeah.
You know, which makes you, it's a really great exercise for a writer anyway. Cause right.
Oh,
makes
that's,
you write.
I didn't even think of that. Wow.
And I just,
that's cool.
So I sent them the first story and they just totally fell for it. And then they decided they wanted to do a whole book of them. And then the most fun thing was I started going through the archives. I went to the DC Comics archives, which,
where,
you know.
Where is that?
It was in the, you know, at the time, I can't remember the building because it was some time
ago. But it was
ago.
Like in Midtown?
Yeah, in Midtown. And believe me, very few people are allowed to go into the secret library. You have to put on white gloves.
What's it like?
Oh, really?
And there's like
How
somebody, there's somebody, and you have to sign in, and they're very, you can't take the books out. You have to look at them there, and they're very protective of them, even the romance comics there. And I just like started, I was in heaven. I just started looking through them, just looking for...
So, I'm sorry, before you get to the... So DC Comics has like a Library of Congress for their own comics?
Yes, they have
a... In Midtown.
Yeah, and they're all bound in like 8 or 10 different comics, bound in a leather or plastic binder.
It must be enormous.
It's a big library. I don't have a picture of the whole library, but...
Right. I mean, you're like making for a comic book lover.
I know.
It's like... I'm sorry, I don't think I could go anywhere else with this episode. I'm just like, I'm thinking about the archives. I'm like, I'm going into the archives. Oh, all right, 1965 The Flash. Here's every issue.
I shouldn't even probably be telling people that it's there.
No, it's good. Our audience is salivating.
Our audience is also very small. That's okay.
So I
Bernice,
was...
Bernice, don't tell anyone.
I just was, when I went through the files, I just was looking for extraordinarily outrageous graphics. You know, like really stupid looking girls, or really weird looking scenes. You know, something that
right.
I knew that I could sink my teeth into.
So what'd you do? You read the comics and you would pick out stories with interesting visuals, and then say to DC, I want to do this, 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 and this. And then they would white out the panels
yes.
and send it to you?
Right, because I would just flip through them. I wouldn't read the stories, because I want to be influenced by the actual stories. I never read the real stories until after I did my story.
Right.
Because I just didn't
right.
want to be influenced. I wanted to go purely from the pictures. So I would just flip through to look for interesting graphics, that I would mark down which ones they were. And then I would tell my editor, please send me this, this, and this. And they would white them out for me and send me the stories. And I would just stare at them and have the story emerge.
Were there any that didn't work?
Yes. There was one in particular that I really wanted to do that had to do with... the couple was, for some reason, in Paris, and they were at the Louvre. and it had to do with the painting of the Mona Lisa. And in the real story, there was all of a sudden a mustache on the Mona Lisa. And the whole story was already so spoofed that I could actually not spoof it on top because right. It was already so funny. It's a great exercise for anybody who's trying to write fiction because right. Fiction should always be character driven. And this book forced me to do that because I couldn't. The stories are too dumb in 8 pages. You can't possibly create a story that's plot-driven out of an 8-page comic. It has to be character-driven from the pictures. So it was almost like, I feel like they should give this as a course to fiction writers, to go ahead and blot out the balloons and give them a story, because it forces you to think about what the character is. It has to be from the character.
Did you work with a professional letterer?
No, I could tell about how many words would fit in, because I could just tell from the size. And so I would look at the size of the balloon, and then I would write on a Word document. And then if it was too long, the editor would come back to me and say, you need to shave off a couple of words here and there. Right. And that was the thing that was also one of the most unique experiences, was that my two editors, both Trent and Steve, who were both involved in that process, they didn't do anything. They just basically told me how fabulous it was. I've never had that experience. I'm sorry, it makes me sound egotistical, but they just didn't edit. They did a little here and there, but they basically just said, this is the funniest thing ever. We're printing it. It was great.
Well, there is something about that. Like, it feels like a book that just works. Like, it just sort of came together, and it's kind of an ideal situation. Like, you picked all the right stuff. You were the right writer for it.
Yeah, it really weird. It was weird. It was like suddenly, like everything that I'd ever done in my life or been, it was like, nah, here I am. This particular book is it. So.
And there was nothing that you tried to do that they steered you away from? Like, did you ever try to do something that was too outrageous and DC said, nah, we don't want to go that far?
No, I don't think so. There was only one particular one where the ending wasn't working. That was the one that in the book called The Narcissist Heart.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And that particular one I had trouble ending.
Uh-huh.
So I think that, as I recall, I tried several different endings for just the last couple of pages because it wasn't working out.
I just read, and it was my favorite one that I read. It's called Psychic Matchmaker. This one, did you read this one?
It's great, yeah,
it's
I read
insane.
Them all.
It's like the woman, there's two women, and they're like dealing with this one other guy who doesn't have blue hair, but he has brown hair. And she's doing a match, and then they end up in bed.
That's the thing.
At the end.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing.
End up in bed.
This was the one that everyone asked me, like that everybody accused me of changing the art at the end,
right?
Because you couldn't believe that was real. But if you take into account the fact these were written by men,
yep.
So like they're subconsciously or not, acting out their own fantasies.
Yeah.
Like in the real story, these are two sisters or two cousins or something, and they're just having a sleepover talking about boys.
Right.
So the very last panel, they're getting into bed together.
Right.
And I almost thought that it was one of those ones that I couldn't do because it was already so crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
But so I had to really finesse the ending to make sure I didn't go too far. like the thing with it's so hard not to go for the broad sexual humor when you're doing this.
Yeah.
Which, and I think maybe my own particular, actually innate modesty, because I'm not really that, I don't write big sex scenes when I do fiction or anything. I think maybe that helped me.
But this one was just making fun of so many things that I feel are popular themes the last 15 years with spirituality and stuff, where the one woman says, I feel the energy flowing in from the cosmos. I feel open and clear. And then her psychic, who's half naked next to her, goes, great, hold on to that feeling.
One of my other favorite stories in this book is I Hate My Hair. She's so great. It's the original title.
I love
title
that one,
of
too.
The original title was Stolen Dreams. And the original dialogue, this girl is at a party and her friend is dancing with the handsome guy and she's looking miserable, and the original panel is she's thinking, oh, I mustn't watch them. I can't bear to see the love in his eyes and know that it can never be mine. But in your version, she's got this really close-cropped blonde haircut. And she goes, oh my God, I can't believe this. I'll have to go into hiding. I look like Sinead O'Connor.
The concept is that she's just come from the hairdresser because she's about to to visit her best friend, and the hairdresser has given her a horrible haircut, right. Which all women have experienced some version of this. Her friend, of course, is catty and not tactful.
Right, like nothing like, oh, it's going to grow back, or anything that some normal people would say, but it's like, oh, it looks so weird in the back.
And she's about to kiss the guy, and he comes in really close, and he looks at her, and he goes, you remind me of this guy I knew.
Yeah, right, right. There was a lot of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of, there's a little gay thing going on in that one.
But you know what? I also was taking note of the art. It doesn't seem exactly like the superhero art at that time.
No, it's different. I mean, they obviously, the people who were drawing superhero art, I don't think were drawing these. I think they were like, maybe they were the people who couldn't get the superhero art. I shouldn't say that. Insult anybody who's an ex-romance comic. Because some of the art is quite beautiful.
I'm not saying it's bad. But it's just a little bit different.
Right.
I mean, it has a little bit of John Romita, the first John Romita, who did a lot of Spider-Man in the 60s.
John Romita did a lot of romance comics.
Did he?
Yeah.
Because this art looks like his. The eyes look like his. That was just something that I really noticed. It was just so much. And then I love all your things. 10 ways to get over a broken heart.
Well,
take up flirting.
That was going to be my other question. So interspersed among the comic book stories, there are like advice columns and letters columns.
Right.
How much of those did you write?
I wrote all the ones that are in this book.
Did you write the questions and the responses?
Well,
in some
cases, what I really wanted to spoof those as well, because again, they were really bad advice for young women, all written by probably in an hour by some overworked man at DC Comics. So sometimes I took the questions that were already there and wrote other answers. But in some cases, I also just took the idea and then wrote my own questions and answers. Mm-hmm. Dear Tess, my younger sister is going to be married in a few months. She's been engaged for 2 years, and during all that time, I naturally assumed that I would be the maid of honor at the wedding. Now she has told me that she would like me to be one of her bridesmaids, and that she has asked her best friend to be the maid of honor. It's true that I haven't been very close to my sister in the past few years, because I've been working away from home. Even so, I think she should have shown more consideration toward me. I don't know if I ought to go along with just being a bridesmaid, or if I should teach her a lesson and refuse. Signed, Naomi from Montgomery, Alabama. Dear Naomi, oh, by all means, teach her a lesson. There's nothing like ruining your sister's wedding. I think you should not only refuse to be a bridesmaid, but also refuse to attend, period. Maybe you could pour gasoline on the cake when no one is looking, or put super glue in her shoes so she has to wear them throughout the honeymoon. While you're at it, sis, why don't you go torture some cats and dig up your neighbor's petunias? That sounds like something you might find fun. Signed, Tess T.
Is it still in print?
It is not in print.
You can get it on Amazon. There's copies on Amazon.
You can get it on Amazon or any other place. Used books are sold.
Yeah.
I'm always working, trying to get at least a digital version put back up there, which I don't think should be that hard.
No.
And especially since even though the book has not been in print for years, just last fall it got selected as one of the top 10 funniest books of all times by Inc. magazine.
What?
That's amazing.
I know. It just came out of nowhere, and I keep trying to write to DC Comics or somebody saying, wait a minute, hello.
People still love this book.
I know, and it just gets found, and so it's gratifying even though it's not making me any money right now.
So you have a lot of books, right? How many?
I do have a lot of books. I've written 8 books.
Wow, that's amazing.
The Art of Mingling, which is my other series of books I do, I've just published the 3rd edition.
So what is The Art of Mingling in a nutshell?
The Art of Mingling is a humorous how-to book on how anybody can enter a room full of strangers and feel secure and happy and conquer it.
Well, I'm sure that's valuable. People do have to mingle.
Well, I never thought so when I wrote the book back in, this was 1992 when I wrote that book. And
so what's
the
balance of real advice to it being a humorous book?
Good question. I would say it's
Thank
about...
You.
Good question.
Well stated.
Good question,
Thank
she
High five.
Said.
High five right there.
Good question, she said, making it go longer. Probably about, I would say, 60% advice, 40% entertainment.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of stories that I write to explain the techniques and tips.
Well, it's a wonderful book. I recommend that everybody go out and get it. And I also recommend that DC or Fawcett or whoever owns Fawcett now, just let you try it again. I mean, I how much it. Fun would it be to have another one of these books? Truer Than True Romance by Jean Martinet.
So you're going to play the ukulele now?
No, I was hoping that you would play that song. If I gave you my uke, would you play it?
Sure, why not? This is the Freckle Song. She's got freckles on her butt, she is nice. And when she's in my arms, it's paradise. She sews, she purls, she knits, she's got a lovely pair of eyes. She's got freckles on her butt, she is nice. She's got freckles on her butt, she is nice. And when she's in my arms, it's paradise. All the sailors give her chase, cause they love her naval base.
That was great.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Grown-ass men.